You're listening to the Speechy Side Up podcast. This podcast will cover the flip side of traditional speech and language therapy, so you get inspired and learn from experts in the field. Here is your host, author, AAC specialist, and matcha tea lover, Vanita Litvak. She and her guests are serving up some informative and fun topics in Speechy Side Up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Speechy Side Up podcast. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. This podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment. You can also follow along on Instagram at SpeechySideUp. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Today I'm speaking with the renowned expert in childhood apraxia speech, Nancy Kaufman. Nancy, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm so excited to participate with your podcast.
Well, it's truly an honor to have you on the show. I know that you've spent at least 40 years establishing the Kaufman Speech-to-Language Protocol, which is used all over the world to help children become effective vocal communicators. And I think I can speak on behalf of other SLPs and families in saying that your methods have helped so many children. But let's start with who you are, what you currently do today, and how you got there.
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, I sound ancient, but I want to assure you that I'm still practicing and loving every minute of it. So I went to Michigan State University undergrad, Wayne State University in Detroit grad. I started working my first 13 years at a hospital facility, outpatient, and then opened up on my own. I just opened up by myself with an answering machine, if you can remember those things. And then people started to join me. And also there was an occupational therapist next door. And I didn't know that much about occupational therapy and certainly not much about sensory integration. And I was introduced to that, opened up occupational therapy in my center once that particular person had to move away. And then we also opened up an ABA program, applied verbal behavior. We have an additional building that we just opened up a year ago. And now I have 70 employees.
Wow.
So that would be speech and language pathologists, occupational therapists, board-certified behavior analysts, and ABA techs, and our support staff.
That's incredible. And you're managing all of them. Wow.
Well, you know, the lucky thing is that I found some amazing administrators, and I get to do what I love. So I get to see children. My caseload is mostly out-of-state or out-of-country children who most likely have a diagnosis of childhood apraxia speech. And I see them for four-day intensives. And while they're here with me, and I see them for several sessions a day, I record every session, and I also narrate on the recording as though I'm explaining to parents and caregivers and SLPs what I'm doing and why, and what would make sense for this particular child. It's worked out so well because I feel like I can reach a lot more children. And then I also do local evaluations of children below age four, and then I also do some administrating, but don't have to do too much of that.
Yeah, you get to do the stuff that you love. And congratulations on your new facility. I can't wait
to talk
more about those four-day intensives. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But why don't we start with talking about how you specialize in the area of childhood apraxia speech? I know that most of our listeners are speech-language pathologists. Some are newer to the field and just trying to figure out what they want to specialize in. So this might be good for them to hear.
Well, I love that question. So when I was working at a hospital setting, well, before that, I was an intern, both for children and adults. So I was in actually three different hospital facilities for internships through Wayne State University. So while I was working with adults, I was working with some that had apraxia of speech. And what I was being taught was about melody cues and gestural cues. And those things were really interesting to me. And at the same time, I was working with children who struggled to speak. And so I thought, well, why not use some of those same types of cues for children? Maybe it would help them too. I was also in graduate school at the time. And I had my very first course, you're going to laugh because it was so long ago, but it was the very first course they ever had. No, it wasn't even a course. It was a guest speaker on phonology. So all of a sudden, I'm hearing about final consonant deletion and cluster reduction and deaffrication and gliding and stopping and all these different terms. And what that speaker told me was that those are called phonological processes, but they are really just the way that children simplify the adult forms of words. as they're developing speech. It's a systematic way of simplification. And before we had those terms, all we talked about were omissions, distortions, and substitutions. Mm-hmm. So now we had all this other language to talk about error patterns. And then I thought, wow, if typical children use phonological processes to simplify the adult forms of words, why not teach children who struggle to speak and are not following these natural phonological processes to use them to simplify their speech, or really basically simplify the motor plans of words that are too difficult for them to master right away, to give them a functional way of communicating, and then shape those approximations toward target vocabulary and move into expressive language.
And voila.
Yeah, so there were a lot of influences. And now the most current influence, though, on the KSLP methods, they're called the Kaufman Speech to Language Protocol, KSLP. I hope to continue to learn. And the KSLP has really stood all this time to be a very quality way to intervene, especially for children with childhood apraxia speech. But some children may not have a formal diagnosis of that. Basically, who we're talking about for the KSLP are children that can produce some consonants and vowels, but they struggle to combine them. And then they may have also some other very specific characteristics of CAS. But because we have an applied verbal behavior program, and the person that is the administrator of that is an SLP BCBA, we've really been learning together, and I've been very much influenced by applied behavioral analysis. And I am not going to say that I'm any kind of expert in it, but there were 8 or 9 behavioral strategies that I felt was very important for all of us as clinicians to learn, not only to implement for children who struggle to speak, but to implement for any of the behaviors that we're working on, because that's what we do. We mm-hmm. either establish behaviors that do not exist. In this case, children may not speak at all, or improve upon behaviors that do exist. In this case, kids who talk, but they have unintelligible speech, maybe. And then also eliminate or extinguish behaviors that are interfering to that process. And there's so much about ABA that's just magical in how to gain a skill. And so that's been a very big influence lately.
I completely agree. And I love how you've collaborated with occupational therapists and ABA and have been refining the KSLP, although you said, you know, it's definitely stood the test of time. So I'd like to talk about the signs and symptoms of childhood apraxia of speech that therapists should be looking out for, especially maybe newer therapists who've maybe read about it in a textbook, but seeing it in person is a different thing.
Well, I want to be sure that even if a child does not have classic symptoms of CAS, as far as the KSLP protocols go, we can still help children if we're not even sure if they have CAS. As long as they can produce some vowels and consonants, but they struggle to combine them. But in terms of CAS characteristics, some of the most salient features are challenges with vowel production, but not because of a significant oral motor weakness. If you have very low oral muscle tone and maybe an open mouth posture and you don't carry your tongue at the palate and with your lips together at rest, you may also distort vowels. So that doesn't have to do with CAS. But if you can produce especially isolated vowels like E and U, but then when you're combining movement, which is more the staple of challenges with apraxia, when you're combining movement, such as diphthong vowels like A or I or OW, and you collapse them, those may be the vowel distortions that are apparent in childhood apraxia speech. And so we're looking for children who can produce vowels in isolation, but when they produce diphthong vowels, they may collapse them, or they may collapse vowels in general in connected speech. So that's one characteristic of childhood apraxia speech. Another is inconsistent productions of words over repeated trials. Sometimes you don't see such a variability of production in young children. They may make the same error every time they say that word. But if they are making inconsistent productions, it's more likely that that's a characteristic of childhood apraxia speech. Difficulty with syllabic sequencing. Some children can produce like a CVCV, mama, dada, papa, because it really resembles babbling in infancy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But if you change the vowel and try to get mommy, daddy, puppy, they may just go back to the reduplication. Or if you try to make it a different kind of two-syllable word like happy, tummy, bunny, they might also then start deleting or replacing consonants or vowels. And certainly when you get into multisyllabic words, there are many challenges there too. So with extended syllabic length of utterance, you may have more errors. And then these children may produce some words very well that are kind of pop-out or automatic words. But if you ask them to say those words on direct imitation, they may falter. And sometimes they're exclamations, like they might say, wow, or wee, or mm-hmm. sometimes just salutations like hi, bye, or yeah, no. They have lots of automatic, simple syllables, but it can really confuse somebody into thinking that their speech is very good if they only use those single words and those words are produced very well. Because when you ask them to say words that are beyond those simple syllable shapes, or you're asking them to say those same words on direct imitation, they may fall apart. And then prosody. But, you know, so often we're seeing children so young that they don't have a lot of connected speech to observe. Mm-hmm. But the kids that are talkers can tend to be very choppy. They may have more of a monotone quality. They also may have inconsistent vocal breaks or pauses in between syllables or words, which really can interfere with the listener's understanding of their speech. There are certainly lists of characteristics. They're on our website. I'm sure that they're on Apraxia Kids. Apraxia Kids is really important to know about. It's apraxia-kids.org. Anything you want to know in the world about childhood apraxia speech is on their website. And they also have many webinars. I have two that are included on their webinars. One is about how to implement the KSLP through play and coaching parents. And another one is on cueing and scripting. So cueing, speech motor. I've been saying speech motor lately. I'm trying to change from saying motor speech. You know, it's interesting. But the very first, like the Bibles, you know, of speech pathology were called motor speech disorders. And the thing is that we say fine motor, we say gross motor. Why not say speech motor?
Very interesting.
I must have read it somewhere. I'm sure I didn't come up with this on my own, but our whole staff is moving to speech motor, and that's what we are writing in our reports as well. It just makes sense, and it follows all the other motor skills.
Yeah, it sure does. That's a good point.
So cueing, as it relates to providing visual, auditory, in the KSLP anyway, we don't typically physically touch the children as a cue unless they are not successful with auditory visual cues alone, or they hardly have any vowels or consonants that they are even able to produce in isolation. But pretty much we're doing auditory and visual types of cueing. And then scripting, meaning helping them to combine words to get more into expressive language. Okay. So those are my two webinars with Apraxia Kids. But I also have e-courses through Northern Speech Services. Northern Speech Services, I started out with them probably close to 30 years ago. They really are the people that are like an agent putting me in different states and countries to do my speaking engagements. But they are also the publisher of most of my materials. So that's my relationship with Northern Speech. And they have many different e-courses on their site as well. So that's northernspeech.com.
Okay, wonderful. And that's where they can get the KSLP as well, right?
They carry, I would have to say, all of my materials. And they produce them too. The KSLP test for children was published by Wayne State University Press. My other materials, and by the way, I never had it in my mind to want to sell materials. So as an SLP all these years, and as I was trying to figure out how to work on some really specific syllable shapes with young children, I just kept getting pictures of objects and then sorting them. Okay, I need some CVs, and I need some VCs, and I need some CVCs, and onward. And then I just decided I was going to make my own kit. And then once I did, Northern Speech put it together. It was just made sense to get it out there for publication. Once I had kit one, I needed a kit two, because that was more of the complex consonants and syllabic sequences. And then that kind of moved into the workout book and this mutt family of dogs. The mutt family is a family of dogs that mostly have simple bisyllabic syllable-shaped names. Because as a clinician, I'm sure there's not any research about this, but I've found that once children can produce simple bisyllabics like happy bunny, tummy, tuba, they really can move much more quickly into other syllabic sequences and into connected speech. And so I named the dogs like Buddy and Moppy and Dottie and Mona and Toby and so forth, simple two-syllable names. They only have ma, ba, pa, ta, da, na, and ha consonants. And I'm adding a schwa only because I can't say them fast enough without adding a schwa, but we shouldn't add that to them. But then they can use those dog names as subjects, and then the workout book has the dogs doing different things and getting them into two and three word utterances and moving into present progressive, and it's more fun. And those pages are reproducible, so we can have something for the parents to work on with them as well. And then that led to the puzzle. So the Mutt family, I think it's called the Language Builder. I wanted the children to have manipulatives instead of just books and pictures. And then that led to the doghouse game. And that's my newest, what's in your doghouse? Just because my daughter's an SLP in the pools. And she said, we really need some materials for groups. And so the doghouse game has six playboards of different scenes and houses, dog houses. And then the children can open them. They're different colors. They have different common objects in them to pull out. And then they can use some pivot phrases, which are part of the KSLP, meaning phrases that stay constant, like I want to, let me, I want green, I want to open green. And then once they take out the item, they can name the function of it, they can match it to their board, and then they can get into pronouns and possessive pronouns, like if Buddy is drinking his milk, then the children can say he is drinking his milk. Or if they're just doing subject verb object, they can just say Buddy drink milk. There's lots to do with that kind of manipulative. It's so much fun to produce things that people are really finding useful. That's all through Northern Speech. And then I produced a DVD of how to do the KSLP methods, and DVDs are becoming obsolete. And so it's an e-course through Northern Speech as well.
Okay, wonderful.
So, oh, but I forgot. There's also the Sign to Talk programs too. You know, because we have an ABA program, we see 30 to 40 kids at least that have autism spectrum disorders, and many of them struggle to speak. Tamara Kasper, K-A-S-P-E-R, was one of the first SLP BCBAs that I had met. And she had come to several of my conferences, and then we started to have a conversation. She's just a brilliant speech and language pathologist, and she's in Wisconsin. But she said, you know, we really need some different kits because we need some pictures of highly preferred items and activities, and then some of the approximations on the backs of the cards for children, especially with autism, because that's going to be more motivating for them to learn how to make requests for highly preferred items and activities. And so we did a program called Sign to Talk, where it's a whole specific technique of teaching sign language as a bridge to vocal communication. It was Tammy's idea, and she was so wonderful and did so much, most of the work on it. It's the Sign to Talk, and it's Kasper and Kaufman. So it's the K and K Sign to Talk. The person that's the SLP BCBA, that's the administrator of our programs here, is Carrie Peterson, another absolutely brilliant speech and language pathologist and board certified behavior analyst who's teaching me so much. Together, we're really working on establishing vocal skills for children with autism. It's very challenging. It's very different than just the children with CAS. And we've been using talk tools, but some of them are Renee Roy Hill's apraxia shapes that go into the children's mouth so that they can feel and have that feeling as to how to produce some of these vowels and consonants that they don't even have in their repertoire yet. And then fade those cues out and help them to combine movement to start to form words. And we're just blown away by the fact that some of these kids, I would have to say 20 years ago, I probably would have said that they're not going to be able to become a vocal communicator. And I've really changed my mind about that. But the thing is, because we get to have these kids all day, 5 days a week, that's why I think it's also working better, because we have more time than 2 half hours a week to work with these kids.
Yeah, definitely any intensive therapy, you're going to see a lot more progress. We did that when I was in the aphasia clinic at UCF. I actually worked with an individual who had apraxia. He had a stroke, and we did a melodic intonation therapy. That was what I was assigned to. It was very interesting.
Yeah, you know, that's so funny. I have this child who, unfortunately, because of a very rare seizure condition, had to have some parts of her frontal lobe actually removed. She really struggled to speak, but boy, could she sing. And I didn't really know melodic intonation therapy the way that it was probably supposed to be implemented. But like you, knowing about it, I just tried it. And so we started with melody throughout words and then faded out the melody for her to then be able to use words more appropriately and meaningfully. Great. But yeah, we have to pull from everywhere.
Yeah. And that's one thing I really admire about you is we talked about recently or earlier this week, you know, you're in the trenches. You're not just like talking about this or presenting the research, like you're working with these kids constantly. And so you know, it's an ever evolving process and you're finding new things that work. And it's just really amazing to watch you. And so if people are interested in seeing some of the videos that you take during these 4-day intensive, where can they watch those?
Oh, well, those videos go right to the, I have a child for a 4-day, I'm recording everything about them. Those videos they're owned by the parents and the parents share them with that child's speech and language pathology team. Otherwise, in my e-courses through Northern Speech, I show every technique I can make available. And
perfect.
Then also in my webinars through Apraxia Kids as well.
Okay, that's great. So they can go there. So let's talk about how you can assist families and children from afar. I was so excited to see this on your website. I actually had no idea that you did this. And we've talked about it a little bit so far, these 4-day intensives. So talk a little bit more about the video consultations you can do, the speak 4-day intensives, and what those entail.
Okay. So sometimes a parent finds out about my 4-day intensives because there's lots of groups, apraxia groups for moms and I should say and dads. And sometimes SLPs who are familiar with my work know about these too, and they will make a recommendation to the parent to get a hold of me. But basically, I do 4-day intensives, but I have to see video first because I have to know that A, that the child's appropriate for my methods, and B, what are the SLPs doing with that particular child? What are their methods? So the first thing I do is after I see some video, as I talk to the parent about my findings, I invite them if I feel that the child's a good candidate to see me. And I also get permission to speak to their SLP. And then we can collaborate. I can talk about, I just did one today. So, and I see this all the time too, where the SLP was, they're showing pictures and having the child imitate words within a syllable shape. And then they don't go on and have them move from imitation to the ability to name the item. So it's all imitation. And imitation only does not help the child to retain the new motor plans of those words. If you just say happy, and the child says happy, you don't go on to the next word. You say, what is it? And if they need a little bit of a cue, you give them, but you just try to get them to the very last response to be as spontaneous and free of cues as possible, and then have them do it a couple more times if you can as well in a playful way. So I see a lot of imitation work, and it's not getting bridged to that spontaneous production. So that's an issue. So we talk about it, and I'll talk about, hey, I didn't see you using any cues. Let's put together some cues for the child to learn and to know what's coming up. And I might see an SLP that's only teaching random words through play. And if you do that, again, child's not going to retain it. So while you're playing, and we always have to have toys, especially with the young kids, but we can talk about what we're doing with the toy, like we're going to put it in, and then the child should say in or out and remember that they should do it again by themselves, in, out, up, down, under, whatever it is, or maybe the language of games, I got a blue, or I need a blue, or it's your turn, my turn, all those things. But sometimes people are teaching random words and the child's not going to ever use them again because they didn't do enough repetition on them and they didn't go forward into spontaneous productions.
That's really important to note. And so that's something that you watch out for when they send you these videos before the intensive, right?
Yeah, sometimes I'll see a video and maybe I think the child may be on the spectrum of autism, but nobody's talking about it. So I feel that it's my responsibility to bring it up. And, you know, the parents don't know me, so it may be easier for me to bring a question like that than other people might be able to bring up. I may think that the child has dysarthria, and therefore I like to send them to oral placement specialists that really help them with feeding, and then they help them with more accuracy of production, and then they send them back to me if they think that they also have apraxia. And I'll try to send them to people that are closer to them instead of coming here to Michigan if I know somebody that would be helpful.
Okay, that's good to know. So do you do those all year round, or is it only certain times of the year?
I do it all year round. I started out with a 3-week summer program, and most of the kids, I take 6 kids for 3 weeks and then another 6 kids for another 3 weeks. But so many of those kids are out of state, out of country, and that's a long time to be gone, and it's very expensive. Then I changed it to 2 weeks. And then we don't have any extra space, even over the summer, even with our 2 buildings. And so what I'm doing is just continuing to do my 4-day intensives over the summer as well.
Oh, wonderful. Perfect.
I think we'll start opening up apraxia programs in the summer again. We have to regroup and figure out when we can do it and where.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what about your video consultations? Do you do those as well?
Well, so most of the time people are sending me video because they want to come for a 4-day. But some people are sending me video because they want me to confirm or deny the diagnosis of apraxia, or they just want me to collaborate with their SLP. And I'll tell the parents too, and I put this on our website too, if the SLPs are not on board with the KSLP methods, then it probably wouldn't make sense to send me a video, because I want to be able to collaborate with the SLP. And I don't want to be dictating to them what they should or shouldn't do. I don't want to be in that position. I just want to help. And some people are not on board with the KSLP. And everybody's entitled to the techniques that they love and that they know that they feel comfortable with. And I want to bring this up too, because this is just such a myth about the KSLP. KSLP is not just about the cards. The cards are just one stimulus item, because you need a visual reference if you want to practice certain syllable shapes. You can't always contrive the environment to work on the specific syllable shapes that you need to work on, right? So I don't just sit and drill children, and any videos you've probably ever seen with me have lots of toys that I'm using with the children, and that's a given. You have to motivate them, and you can talk about the toys, but the toys aren't always the focus of the therapy at the beginning stages, when you really have to get a lot of practice. You start with math practice on maybe a given syllable shape. And then you move to distributed. You start with blocked practice, where you keep things in a specific order, and then you move to random practice. All of these things follow the principles of motor learning, which is a big subject in childhood apraxia speech. But one of the things that I've learned is that anything that you learn about motor learning is no different than what you learn about learning in general. And learning in general is about behavior. And we talked about how the KSLP is really rooted in a lot of applied behavioral analysis kind of techniques. And actually, that segments me. So what did I learn about behavior? A, we need to define the behavior, because I know that sounds so random and so crazy that of course we do, but some people don't. And I talked to my staff. I said, we have observation rooms. Parents are watching all the time. They should know by watching you exactly what you're working on. And if they don't, then you're probably not working on the right thing. But you have to define the behavior. What are you working on? And are you getting enough practice on it? And are you understanding how to get into distributed practice and how you get in from block to random and all those things? So that's one part that we have to do, is define the behavior. We also have to establish motivation. What do the children love? What are their highly preferred items and activities? And some kids don't like conventional stuff. They don't care about toys, right?
That's so true. So
we have to find out, what do they like? I mean, maybe they just like string. Maybe they just like sand, lights. I mean, yeah. So we have to find out. And then we have to have plenty of those things available. And then we need to figure out, of course, through an evaluation, what do they need to work on, and can they imitate? And if they're not imitators yet, we got to figure out how to get them to be imitators. we have to figure out cues and what are going to be the best cues for the child and how to fade them. We have to do something called error correction. Yeah, you know, error correction is fairly new to me because it's an ABA term. But, you know, once the child makes a mistake, you don't reinforce them, but then you totally support them to be correct. Then you have to get that correct response a few more times, and you reinforce according to the effort. So if they're making a really good effort and they really get to the spontaneous appropriate production, they get lots of reinforcer. But if the first time is not correct at all, they don't get any reinforcer. The second time when you support them and they do fine, you get them to do it one more time, you reinforce again. It's a whole technique of understanding how to get that last response to be spontaneous and accurate. And then the other thing is errorless teaching, or some people call it errorless learning. This is so fascinating to me. But basically, it's a way to cue before failure, mm-hmm. or prompt before failure. So if you have a ball, a cup, and a shoe on the table, and you say, give me the ball, and the child totally, you can see that their hand is going to a totally different object. You don't let them touch it. You can take their hand and you can put their hand on the correct object, and that's cueing before failure. So, but for speaking, you have to know their error patterns to be able to cue before failure. And that's a lot trickier, but it's just something to really know. Another thing is to mix and vary our tasks, because so many kids are learning overgeneralization because their SLP taught them to overgeneralize. We've got to make sure that we're not the reason why children are overgeneralizing, especially also with I want phrasing, doing too much of that. As soon as the child says I, they go to want, even though it's really not, that's not what you're asking. You're saying, what do you do with something? And the next word should be eat. But they'll go directly to want because they're so overprogrammed to do that.
Yeah, that's something that I talk a lot about. Well, we've talked about like my background in AAC and not jumping too quick to want after you've like taught I, like teach I in isolation, generalize it to different activities, teach want in isolation and generalize it to different activities, just in the context of using an AAC device. So that's something that we have to watch out for. But I love hearing how it applies to childhood apraxia of speech as well.
Well, I think that these concepts apply to anything speech and language pathologists are teaching, whether it's receptive, expressive, speech motor, social language, it applies to everything. Just like you're saying, it applies to what you're doing as an AAC expert. And that fascinates me. I am so not techie. I just really admire people that really understand how to use AAC devices and how to teach them. And then the tricky part is, how do you get vocal skills right along with AAC? Because that's what parents are looking for. And of course, they should be, but...
Yeah. And I'm loving hearing, like, I loved hearing about like the talk tools and how you're kind of marrying that with the KSLP. I'm just really fascinated. And I feel like I have so many questions for you. Yeah.
But, you know, let me say about talk tools. Talk tools got a bad rap because I want to make sure that everybody realizes when I say talk tools or Renee Roy Hill's apraxia shapes, we are not doing them for oral motor exercises. We are using them as a tool to gain a consonant or vowel, or a combination of a consonant and vowel. So we're not teaching feeding, even though I love the people that understand how to do that mm-hmm. and use their tools. But this is directly for helping a child to produce, not just to make the underlying movement or not just to do an exercise.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for providing that clarification.
And, you know, when I have an opportunity to do something like this, and I want to thank you again for inviting me, it gives me an opportunity to talk about some myths or misconceptions about the KSLP, because I know that there are other CAS treatments that would never teach an approximation to a child that has CAS. And some people don't understand that teaching approximations is a shaping method. And I forgot to talk about that. And when we're talking about behaviors, shaping is the biggest thing of all, is knowing how to shape.
Mm-hmm.
So teaching an approximation or simplifying the motor plan of a word is temporary. It's a way to move toward the target full adult form of the word and make sure that it's completely and perfectly accurate. But if the child is not stimulable for a consonant or vowel that's in a word that's important to them, we can't wait till they are stimulable to work on it. So if the child doesn't have a cut in their repertoire, and they love a cookie, then we're going to figure out what phonological process is typical of neurotypical children, and when they are learning to talk, that don't start with a K. They use a T. And so if they can't say cookie, we're going to ask them to try to say it as tutti. But we're going to model correctly. Did you want a cookie? They might nod their head. Then I say tutti and see if they can do it. If they can't, I might let them voice it and say dutti because it's easier to voice prior to a vowel, motorically. If they can't do that, we might have to go to just ookie or utti or ui, just the main vowels. But let's say that they have a ka, but they can't co-articulate it with an e, which is hard to do. If you just learn to say k, but to say ki is much more difficult, then we might have to reconfigurate the word cookie to cook, which makes it assimilated, and then push on the E later, cook-e. And then when they do it fast, they end up being able to say cookie. So when we're looking at a list of favorites, which is part of the KSLP, and we look at favorite foods, drinks, toys, activities, people's names, pets' names, places, they're random words. And we might have to help them to simplify the motor plan of that word and teach them an approximation. But once we teach them approximation, we're going to hold them to that highest approximation. So they no longer can say ookie or tutti. They'd have to say cookie. And then we make sure that we move toward the full, complete form of the word. Let's say the child loves basketball. That's a really hard word. Now, of course, we can just say baw, B-A-W, for ball if they don't have a final L. But they might have to say basketball for now, until we work on that SK blend in the middle. But then we change it, and we no longer will accept basketball, basket, and then ball. And then we no longer reinforce nor accept anything lower. So people think, you know, that KSLP is just about, you know, showing cards and drilling, and then they teach approximations, which is crazy. Why would you ever teach an approximation? I've spoken to hundreds, literally hundreds of thousands of SLPs all over the United States and some other countries. And I always ask my audiences, it might be 100 people, how many of you feel uncomfortable teaching a child an approximation as a temporary way to gain functional speech motor skills toward perfection of the word? Maybe one person raises their hand. And if they're being honest, there may be a few scattered more, but still, because everybody knows that's an okay thing to do. It helps them to have functional communication, vocal functional communication, till they can gain perfection. It just never fails to confuse me as to why there are some people that say that you shouldn't teach approximations.
Right. I mean, the way that you explain it makes perfect sense. And I think a big part of it was that self-awareness part and building up confidence in the children as well by giving them those approximations and them being able to say those and getting reinforced for it builds up their confidence as well.
It does give them confidence. It probably gives them confidence to try words they would never have known to try before, because they know that if they're not perfect, it's still okay.
Right.
Especially children's names. The child's name may be Nathaniel, but I've got to convince the parents that we're going to have to go to Nate for a while. But there are some kids that can't even say a simple CVC for their name. And in those cases, I would give them a nickname that's totally different that they can say, even if it's something like Buddy. You know, what's your name? Buddy. And then teach them how to say their real name. But it's so friendly to say, hey, buddy, come on, let's go, buddy. You know, got to do some convincing. You know, I always talk about the analogy of sign language. If you have to teach sign language to a child that can't speak very well, chances are they can't make the sign accurately either. But you don't just look for a perfect sign, because you can take their hands because you can. You're able to shape hands. And so let's say it's a word potty or something like that, toilet. And it's a T that's between two fingers. It's your thumb between two fingers, and you're supposed to turn it, twist it. Those kids can probably not make that T for potty very well, or twist it. And so we're going to let them make a fist, or we're going to let them just make a wave of their hand. But we know that they're saying that they need to go potty. And the thing is we can say, oh, yeah, you have to go potty. We can take their hands. We can shape their hands to make the sign accurately and then take them. But you can't do that with a mouse.
Yeah.
And no matter how much external prompting that you know, it doesn't necessarily force them to produce accurate vowels and consonants. Some kids need a physical cue, but that's all it is. It's a physical cue, and it reminds them what to do. It doesn't really make them produce the sound accurately necessarily.
Yeah.
You can't manipulate oral structures to get a child to make an N or an S or an R. You just can't.
I loved that analogy with the sign language, and especially when you're talking about approximations, like if you have a child who makes an approximated sign for more, like, are you going to let them get frustrated until they make it perfectly right? Or you're going to reinforce that approximation. So it makes sense that you would do it with a motor speech pattern as well, or speech motor pattern.
Speech motor.
Yeah. I'm going to use that from now on.
So approximations of words are the same thing as shaping hands for sign language. It's just that you can't shape a mouth or the internal oral posturing that is necessary to produce consonants and vowels very easily. And so you do it through approximations.
That makes perfect sense. How young should people be making referrals for childhood apraxia of speech? How young is, you know, the youngest child that you've worked with?
The literature says that any child who is not talking by age 2 needs to be evaluated, period. That doesn't mean they have CAS. It's not so much about age, about how to diagnose CAS, but we can be wrong when we do it too early. We really need to work with a child and then see if they're really showing some of the salient characteristics of CAS. But you can't go wrong. We also know which 2-year-olds that we need to take. You know, if they had a very difficult birth history, if they couldn't nurse very well or bottle feed very well and they're not talking, do they already have a syndrome diagnosed and they're not talking? Is there a history of speech and language challenges in the family? Developmental milestones are slow from the start. I mean, we know which 2-year-olds need to come in. And even the 2-year-olds that are doing everything else perfectly, but they're still not talking at 2, we need to start them out. If they don't have CAS, we'll know, because they'll go very fast. You know, we'll just break through, get them talking, and let them go on their way. So I think we need to err on the side of caution, take 2-year-olds that aren't talking, and then work with them. And we can say suspected, small s, suspected CAS, until we have a more firm diagnosis.
Okay, perfect. That makes sense.
I want to say something too, that I learned the suspected CAS from David Hammer.
Okay.
And he's retiring this year. He works at Apraxia Kids and he's retiring. And he's just such a lovely and wonderful man and person, and also an amazing SLP. The other thing I want to do a shout out about is that I've had the opportunity to do some consultations at different private practices. There's 2 places I go every year. One of them is the Caruth Center and Parish School in Houston, Texas. Caruth Center is very much like my private practice, although they don't do ABA. And the Parish School, which they're both on the same campus, is a full school for kids with communicative challenges. It is just absolutely amazing. They also, in the summer, do the Kaufman ABC. The KABC is the Kaufman Apraxia Boot Camp. So there is a summer program in Houston, Texas, that I'm not sure how many weeks they are. I also go to Suburban Speech, and that is Nancy Polo's practice in Short Hills, New Jersey. And well, what I do there, by the way, in both those places is the SLPs line up kids that want to see me, or that they want to see me, or the parents want to see me, and they give them to me. And so instead of me coaching and critiquing the SLPs working with the child, I work with the child and I narrate just the way I would do if they were on video while the SLPs in the room, and we collaborate that way. And it's just been amazing. And I'd like to do more consulting. I mean, I'm not even close to getting, you know, to retirement, but I think that's something that I would like to do more of down the road, because my staff is just so wonderful at the KSLP methods here in our center.
So if people were interested in having you consult, should they reach out to you, or that you're not there yet?
Knowing that they are interested is going to be helpful to me.
Okay.
I don't know, because I do so much traveling already, but it'll be nice to know, and then we can maybe figure something out for the future.
Speaking of like traveling, are you doing any in-person trainings coming up?
So my schedule is through Northern Speech Services on my website too. Our website is KidSpeech, so KIDSPEECH.com. Most of them are, like I said, they're through Northern Speech. And then I certainly get invited. I love to do state conventions. That's always fun. I'm always open to specific invitations, but I do get placed through Northern Speech all over the country. The next thing I'm doing is MSHA, which is the Michigan Speech and Hearing Association here. And then after that, I'll be in Rochester, New York. And then I'm going to Austin, Texas, and I'm not speaking. I'm going there because it's a verbal behavior conference.
Oh.
And not off, but being available because I'm going to be a grandparent for the first time.
Yay. Congratulations.
My daughter, Carly Weberman, is an SLP and she's due in July and it's a girl.
That is so exciting. And I love that your daughter became an SLP too.
Well, you know why she did? Because I never told her to.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep.
When she was in elementary education and she was doing her mentorship or some kind of externship where she was a teacher and her supervising teacher was pregnant and actually had to leave early, which left her really taking over the whole class. And you know how they put in a substitute, but she still really did all the work anyway. So, you know, there were like 27, 28 children. And somebody said to her, why don't you go into speech and language pathology? And then you get to do one child at a time.
Yeah.
And I think it made her really think about it. And that's I'm great. Really glad that she did. And I know she's glad that she did as well.
Yeah, that's great. That's a good story. My sister-in-law is a physical therapist. And she was the one who my undergrad was in psychology. And I was like, not really sure if that was what I wanted to do. I had done an internship and it wasn't that great of an experience. So she was like, you should try speech language pathology. You'll always have a job. And I was like, all right, that sounds like a plan. And took a linguistics class and loved it. And thankfully got into graduate school. I had to take some prerequisites, but it worked out. So
that's funny. You know, I have a story as to how I got into speech pathology. I was very musical as a kid, like in a really weird way. I could go up to the piano and play what I heard. So I was very young and my parents were like, oh my goodness, you know, we've got some genius on our hands. And I took piano lessons and I had a really good ear for a lot of different instruments, but I was going to go into music at Michigan State and maybe music therapy. And I had to audition and I couldn't read notes. Never could, still can't. And then somebody said, well, maybe you should go into speech pathology because you could use your ear for a different field and maybe audiology. And so that's what I did.
Wow. What a great story. And now look at you. And your parents were not far off. You are a genius.
Oh, God.
You know,
and Mom and Dad, did you hear that? Well, that was very sweet.
Well, I feel like this is a good segue to play our game. It'll be a short little game. We talked about it and it's just a little getting to know you. I feel like you've given so many wonderful tips. So I want people to get to know Nancy Hoffman, you know, outside of therapy as well. So what I'd like you to do is pick three consonants, and the consonants that you pick are associated with just a getting to know you question. And I'll read those questions.
All right. PTK.
Perfect. All right. P, someone you would like to spend time with.
Who are my favorite actresses?
Who was
Meryl
it?
Streep.
Oh, I love
Meryl
her.
Meryl Streep or Holly Hunter or Hilary Swank.
I love
I'll go
Streep.
With those.
Okay. Those are great. The second one for T, your favorite television show.
Oh, Bachelor.
Ooh.
Oh, gosh. Favorite pastime. It is such a bunch of crap, and that's why I love it so much.
That's how I feel about The Housewives. Like, if I want something mindless, I watch that.
Yep, mindless is the right word. Yep.
All right. And since we're recording on Pi Day, the last question is perfect because it's your favorite type of pie.
It's gotta be apple.
Yum. Yes, I love. Do you make it or you have a place that you buy it?
Are you kidding me? I don't even cook at all. Zero zippo. Terrible at it. Learned helplessness. Can't do it.
Yeah, that's me too.
I'm a really good shopper.
Well, this has been...
What a delight you are. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, I feel the same about you. And you shared a lot of websites, but I just want to recap. So if people want to find more information, where should they go to?
Okay. So apraxia-kids.org, Northern Speech Services, NSS, so N as in Nancy, S as in Sam, S as in Sam.com. And, you know, Tammy Casper has an e-course through Northern Speech for implementing the KSLP and other methods for kids that have autism spectrum disorders. It's a 9-hour conference, but you can come and go with it, you know.
Okay.
It's called Progressive and Systematic Speech and Language Training for Children on the Autism Spectrum.
Okay.
It's a great course.
I like that you read the whole thing because I think people will search for it and, you know, may have had trouble. So now they know exactly what it is.
He goes by Tamara, or Tammy is T-A-M-I.
Okay. Perfect.
Casper, K-A-S-P-E-R.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of your tips and tricks. And I know people are just going to love hearing from you so much.
I'm just thrilled to have been invited.
Well, thanks again, and hope we get to speak again soon.
Thanks so much.
Did something in this episode really resonate with you? Want to know what other SLPs thought about it too? While you might feel isolated in your work setting, every week you're tuning in with thousands of other SLPs. Crazy, right? You can connect with some of these other SLPs on the private Speechy Side Up Pod Facebook group, so you don't have to feel like you're doing this alone. We just ask that you leave a positive review before you request to join. This helps to spread the word and get more interviews with experts in our field. Thank you for listening, and I hope to see you on Facebook.